I'm an addict. My name's Wanda.
Wanda.
I'm nervous, so. I guess what I was thinking about this topic, well, first of all, I want to thank Stephanie for calling and asking me to do this. I panicked a little bit, and I always think it's exciting to do a workshop till I get there, and then I said, oh, my God, why did I decide to do that, you know? And I didn't know this convention was going to be this big, you know? I'm from Tennessee. When I was growing up, this is what came to mind. I grew up in a very large family. My mother had 14 kids, and I was the last one. So by the time I came along, she already had grandkids. So when I grew up, I felt like I never grew up with any love. You know, I don't ever remember her holding me or giving me a hug or kissing me or anything. And my father died when I was 8, and after he died, it was just like I really felt like I grew apart even more from my family, you know. So I just craved that love so bad. So when I found drugs, I mean, it just made everything okay for me, you know, because I never felt like I belonged anywhere. I always felt less than because we grew up so poor. And in school, you know, I was teased a lot because I was skinny. And so it was just like, That was it for me, you know. I thought, oh, finally I can be whatever I want to be, you know. And then when I found men, that made it even better. And I know for me that all through my addiction, I was looking for that man that I thought was going to fix me. You know, I thought if I just found the right one, he would fix me, you know. And so that's what I searched for. And in every relationship, my first long-term relationship, I got married at 17 and stayed married for 8 years. He was very verbally and physically abusive. And I had to turn into what he wanted me to be. And that was my first experience with being something else other than I wanted to be. You know, he wouldn't let me wear makeup. I had to wear what kind of clothes he told me to wear. I had to wear my hair like he liked it. And it was just like I didn't know who I was. That's when I first lost myself, you know. And he controlled what I drank. You know, I really was only into that drug of alcohol at that time. And so he controlled it. You know, he never let me drink a lot. But towards the end of our marriage, I got so tired of him, you know, always being in control, that I started sneaking it, you know. And I was, you know, so I would get us invited to parties at friends' house, and then that was my excuse to get loaded, you know. And he would get like really mad and wouldn't speak to me for days. But so, you know, I had to watch what TV shows he wanted to watch. It was just like all that, and I lost myself. And so it continued on like that in using, you know, that if I really like country and western music, but when I was using, I always had to like rock and roll because that's what most of the guys that I dated liked, you know. And so it was just like, and if I was dating a guy that liked football, I would get all into football, you know. I knew all the players, you know, and it was just like, it was unbelievable. And so it was just always trying to be what they wanted me to be and not who I wanted to be, you know. During my addiction, I lost custody of my kids, and so I didn't see them from the time they were like 6 and 7 years old until they were about 10 and 11. And I didn't know these kids, you know. And what ended up happening is over the years, even though I've been clean, I'll have 25 years this year, but my... But my daughter has never forgiven me for not being there, she says, when she was growing up. And she's been in and out of these rooms ever since I've been clean, and she just can't get it, and she blames me, you know. And I fall into it, you know, every time. You know, she gets very verbally abusive whenever she gets mad at me, and I won't do what she wants to do. And, it feels like I've called my sponsor so much over the years, and I've worked the steps on this. You know, I've worked 1, 2, and 3 so many times over this very problem of not being who she wants me to be. And so, you know, I had to set some boundaries a few years ago. You know, she can't live with me anymore, you know, because she's stolen so much from me and my husband. and just how verbally abusive she is to me. He just doesn't like it. But that's the first thing, you know, comes to my mind when I think about this, because I want her to love me so bad that I want to be what she wants me to be, but I can't. You know, I have to have these boundaries or I will just be, you know, hurting her more. She has a little girl that's 5, and that's what really... It's like right now she's angry at me because I didn't do something she wanted me to do, and I don't even know what it was. She won't even tell me. You know, she just says, I'm mad at you, and I don't ever want you to call me again. You know, I don't ever want to speak to you again. And so, you know, it hurts. But what I've tried to do is, and my sponsor's really been helping me with this, is just saying, I am enough. You know, I don't have to be what she wants me to be, and I'll never be what she wants me to be. And and it's interesting because I also have a son that's exactly a year younger than her, and he's been clean for quite a few years now, and it's like... He gets mad at her for the way she treats me and the way she blames me for everything. And he and I have a great relationship today. And he has 2 kids that he has custody of and he's raising. And she gets jealous of our relationship, too. You know, she brings that up all the time. Well, Ronnie's your favorite, you know. Well, he also lives an hour from me, and she lives in Chicago. You know, it's a lot easier to spend time with him. But so, you know, I guess... And I really had to work on this because my husband just finally got to the point a few years ago where he finally had to say, if you let her come live with you again, come live with us again, I've got to leave because I can't put up with it again, what she does to you. And I've worked real hard on the steps since I've been clean of figuring out who I am and what I wanted to be. And when I, the first sponsor I got, I said that, you know, God, I don't know who Wanda is or what I like or what I don't like. And it was suggested that that I just try to figure that out. You know, I started talking to God about it. And the first time I moved into an apartment, I didn't never live by myself till I got clean. You know, it was the first time I ever lived by myself. And I wouldn't turn my TV on for weeks, you know, because it was nothing I really wanted to watch. I'd rather be at meetings or with my friends, you know, hanging out after meetings. And so that was the very first step I got to learn a little bit about me. And so I had to start working on the self-esteem stuff, too, of figuring out that that I am a worthy person, you know, and I had this big hang up with this whole God thing, you know, that because the way I grew up, that in the Baptist, you know, that it was, I grew up that he's a punishing God, and you know, and that's all I can remember thinking when I was using was, you know, God, I'm never going to make it to heaven because all these things I'm doing, you know, and so I just totally turned my back on that whole God concept, you know, and so when I got here, I had to learn how to get my own concept of God, and that's what's really helped me through the years with this, is that I learned that God had already forgiven me for everything I had ever done, and it was me that had to learn to forgive myself, and that's been the hardest part of my recovery, because she can put it back into me in a minute, you know, by saying, you weren't there for me when I was growing up, you know, and even though she's doing the same thing to her daughter right now. You know, my daughter's a crack addict, and she goes out on these binges and leaves her daughter with some, you know, some older man that they live with. But, you know, it's okay. She can't see herself. She just sees what I did to her, and she thinks that that's what everything happened is my fault. So I've really had to work hard on that and realize that I'm not making her decisions for her. You know, I know that I chose my own path, and I tried to blame it on my first husband. And that's the first thing I said when I made it to treatment. Well, he turned me on to pot. And so they said, well, did he twist your arm? I said, no. So... You know, but I wanted to blame it on him, you know, and I wanted it to be his fault that I was an addict, and I didn't realize that I believe now that I was an addict before I ever picked up, because I didn't want to be who I was, I didn't ever like who I was, And I was always thinking that you had it better than I did, you know, and that it was just that whole concept. And at the end of my using, my self-esteem got so low, and I wanted to kill myself so bad, but I just didn't have the nerve to do it, you know. And I thought I was crazy, you know. My family had, because the way I acted a lot, my family had already always told me that, you know, that I was probably crazy. So what I did was I went into a mental hospital, and after I was in that psychiatric hospital, probably the second day, I realized I'm not crazy. You know, there were some people in there that really needed to be in there, you know, and I knew I wasn't one of them, you know. But this is how God works for me. I ended up on the same floor as the chemical dependency unit, because back when I got clean in 1983, we didn't have all these billboards. Think you got a drug problem, you know, we can help. Or I didn't know anything about treatment centers. Only thing, you know, I vaguely heard of AA because I had a sister that had went a few times off and on. And I thought an addict was somebody that lived under the bridge, didn't have a job. You know, we had an area in our town that, you know, homeless people hung out under the bridge, and that's what I thought they were. And I was able to hold on to a job sometimes for a month or a week or 2 days, you know, and I never saw that it was my using that made me lose those jobs. You know, I just thought, well, you know, I don't want to call in again sick, so I just didn't go back, period, you know. So, but I didn't ever equate all that together, you know, that was a problem. You know, I just you know, thought it was something going on with me. And when I finally, it took me, after I got out of that first marriage, it took me like 7 years of looking for that Mr. Perfect. And I finally figured out I wasn't going to find him. So, and I thought, well, if I get married again, you know, then maybe I can have something again, because I'd lost everything I ever had a couple of times over, and I have a car or anything. So I thought, well, if I get married again, you know, maybe I can get my own car again and get back on my feet, you know. So I met this guy, and I knew that I might not better say too much about him because he was from Baltimore. but I met him, and he had a really good job. He worked at, you know, I got clean in Louisiana, and he worked at General Motors. And so he started, you know, saying, well, why don't we move in together? And I said, oh, no, I'm not ever living with another man unless we get married. You know, he said, okay, well, let's get married, you know. And so I decided to marry him, you know, and I knew that I didn't love him, you know, but I still had this thing in my mind that you know, life was going to be wonderful if I got married. And so I got married to somebody I didn't know anything about, you know, and we got married, and he liked to sit in front of the TV and read the paper or read a magazine, and he didn't want you to turn the channel, you know, and my kids came back to live with us after we got married, and he resented that, because all of a sudden he had these two kids, you know, and that he didn't know, and this wife that he didn't know, and I didn't know him. It's just like it really became hard to deal with. So just to show you how fast my disease progressed, we got married March, and by August I was in treatment. So, you know, but it helped me get there, I think, because of the fact that I really put a lot more effort in trying to get high, because I was so miserable with these two kids I had that I didn't know, and this husband I had that I didn't really want to go home to. So I tried to stay high all the time, you know, even more so than I ever had before. And it really got to me, you know. It was just like, y'all know it's a hard job, you know, it's a hard job. And so I think that's what made the depression get so bad, and that's, you know, that's what saved me, and that's what I'm glad to hear. And so, but we had nothing in common, you know. We didn't like the same things. I'm very athletic, you know, I like to do outdoorsy things, and he didn't. And if we went to family gatherings and stuff, he wanted to be in the room with the women, you know, and I wanted him to be in the room with the men, you know, really, because that's where I wanted to be. But, you know, and so it's just been real hard, you know. I've really worked the steps hard, I feel like. And I just want to say about sponsorship, you know, I've went through a few sponsors since I've been here, and each one of them has taught me a lot of good things about the steps. And each one of them, I've worked the steps a different way. And the sponsor I have today, I've had for about 3 years now. And we moved to Seattle, Washington 3 years ago. And And I knew that the sponsor I had at that time, I'd had her for 10 years, and it had kind of got stagnant, you know. She wasn't giving me any assignments anymore when I called, and it was just like, it just didn't feel like it was working for me anymore. And I kept thinking of all these things I'd heard over the years, that if you don't think you have the best sponsor in the world, you probably don't have the best sponsor in the world. And I had always thought she was a wonderful sponsor up until this point. And so we moved to Seattle, and I met this woman, and the first time I heard her share, I said, oh, man, I want her to be my sponsor. So I went up and asked her, and she said, oh, I'm not really good sponsor material. You know, sometimes I don't check my messages for a couple of days. I said, I'm not high maintenance, you know, because I've been clean a long time, you know, and I know a lot about the steps. The thing that brings me back down with, I think the thing I call her the most about is when my daughter is giving me, you know, all this grief and I'm not feeling like me anymore, you know, that I can just immediately get back into that low self-esteem stuff. But I've been working the steps again out of the workbook this time. It's the first time I've ever done them out of the workbook. And it's being willing to do it, even though I've been clean this long, you know, that I still want to learn, and I still want to become that person that that I know I can be, the best person that I can be, you know. And we moved to Chattanooga 2 years ago, and it was real tough moving there, because there's not a lot of women there with a lot of time, and they weren't very embracing, I guess would be a good word for it, when I moved there. And I would call and say, God, these women, you know, they're just not coming up to me, and they're not talking to me, you know, so I just kept showing up, you know, and kept doing it, and so finally what I ended up doing was instead of trying to get into their group and their clique, I started scooping up the newcomer women and talking to them and telling them to call me, you know, and let's get together for dinner and that. And so now I've got that little, you know, little sponsorship thing going with these women there, and it's really working good for me, you know, that because for me, when they're working the steps, and as a newcomer, you know, so I got three of them that's got under 5 years, and it's like it brings all that stuff back up to me that I had forgotten about, you know, about how hard it is the first few years to stay clean, you know, and it has not been easy, you know, over the years. There has been so many times that I have thought that I deserve to use, that I should use, but I remember when I first got here, somebody told me just to try to walk it all the way through and then remember what would I feel like tomorrow. And that's what I always ask myself when I think about using. Well, what am I going to feel like tomorrow? And is it really going to fix anything? No, it's going to make it worse. So, and I was so close to death when I got here that I don't want to go back to that. So that's what I try to remember. And it's not always easy either, you know, to think about that right away, because you know, that first thing is to get out of the pain, and the pain, getting out of the pain, it would be using. So, you know, I guess the most important thing is just trying to work the steps. And when I got to the sixth step, the last time I did the sixth step, she told me that I had to have 100 character defects. And I thought, don't she know who I am? You know, I don't have no 100 character defects. But a whole bunch of them was all wrapped up into this not knowing who I am, you know, and not understanding what it is that I wanted. So I've been able to do a lot of things that I never thought I could do, and I've really been taking a look at this last year or so, that I've really always wanted to go to college, and I never had the nerve to go, because this, you know, I got that little part of my brain that says, well, you're not smart enough, you know. But I've really been thinking about that this time when I'm going through the steps, and that's what I'm hoping that I can really work on, is to have enough self-esteem to get out there and try to apply myself and go to college. But I know today that I am okay with where I am and where I'm going in my life, but I always want to strive to be a better person, you know, and that's what I have to remember. And there's times that, like, I don't want to go to meetings, you know. I've been clean a long time. I got a lot of good TV shows I like to watch now, and you know, and And so I'll say, oh, you know, I don't really feel like going tonight. But, you know, there might be that woman there that just, you know, needs a hug or something. And so a lot of times that's the only reason I go is because, or I might need a hug. You know, I still need hugs too. And the people tell me they care about me. So, you know, I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to come to this convention. You know, I've really gotten a lot of hugs, and y'all are just really, you know, I never thought that I could bring, you know, y'all've got the Southern hospitality here. You know, everybody's been so friendly and hugging, you know, and it's really made me feel welcome. And thanks for listening.
All right. And our next speaker is Tracy.
My name is Tracy, and I'm an addict. You know, it's funny. We were arguing back and forth before she started to share about who was going to go first. And now that she's done, I'm like, I should have went first. At least it'd be over with. But you know what? Like, I know every time that I speak that God's got me, because I spend time in the bathroom on my knees. You know, and it doesn't matter how you pray, but I spend time with my higher power before I share each time. However, doing that with a topic like this can be risky, because you never know what God is going to bring to you, you know, when you share. And I remember when they first asked me to share this topic, like, it just hit me in the gut. And when something like that hits you in the gut, it's usually because it's been your story. And I don't know, like, she was talking about, like, when men came into the picture, losing yourself to that. Like, I remember long before men came into the picture that I was lost. Like, there was no self-esteem, there was no spirit inside of me, there was no sense of self, long before I ever found relationships. But I do remember when I realized that I had become attractive to the opposite sex, and how powerful of a feeling that could be, you know. And combine that with drugs, you know, and this disease. The rest of the story was nothing but self-destruction and self-hatred and in the end, desperation, you know. And loving you and losing me was not only my story in active addiction, it became my story in recovery. You know, I can remember, like, getting to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous and sitting in these conventions and listening to these topics and hearing other people share their story about, you know, relationships and, you know, and sitting in the meeting and thinking, you know, that, oh, you know, I'm in such a healthy relationship, you know, and whatever, you know what I mean, whatever relationship it was. Because, when I first started coming to conventions, I was a newcomer, you know, and I didn't even know the difference between a healthy relationship and an unhealthy relationship when I got here. My idea of a healthy relationship was you were obsessed with me and I was cool with that. You know, so, you know, I got the power, you know, and I can remember my first serious relationship in Narcotics Anonymous thinking, like, and I was cool with this, you know, like, thinking in the beginning of the relationship, yeah, who's your higher power now? And I was cool with that, you know what I mean? Like, I was all right, you know, and I had maybe a year clean, and I thought that shit was funny, you know what I mean? But that was because that's what my self-esteem needed. Like, I needed to believe that I was all that to you. And the only thing in your life, you know, and it took me, you know, on another 10-year journey in a relationship that was so similar that I couldn't even see it while I was in it. The first three relationships, let me start at the beginning. The first three relationships in recovery were insanity. You know what I mean? Like, they were real quick. They burned hard and fizzled out fast, you know, because we do all that newcomer stuff. We come in dressing up the outside and, you know, getting in. You'll see this sick-ass person across the room and you're like, oh, that's the one. That's the one. And you're sick ass sitting across the room, and he's like, yeah, that's the one. And, you know, and next thing you know, you're hanging out in Oxford houses till like 3 o'clock in the morning, and you got to be to work the next day. You know, and I'm thinking, this shit's cool. I love recovery. This is why I got clean. This is what recovery's all about. You know, and after a little while, that pain brought me to my knees. Because everything that we use in and out of Narcotics Anonymous, you know what I mean? Like, you come in here to get the pain off of you, you know what I mean, of using, and the drugs are gone, you know, and you start to feel good about being clean and not using that. And you don't even realize that there's something inside of you that cries out for fulfillment. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I don't have these drugs anymore. What is it that's going to fill me now? You know, and everybody, something is different, you know. But I'll tell you what, like, I knew, because we're all the same, that this meeting was going to be full, because we're sick addicts, and all of us have been in some type of relationship that we thought, you know, this is the one, you know, and this is the one that brought me to my knees, and this will be the last time that I ever do this, you know. And I remember, like, the third time in a short-term relationship, like, being brought to my knees in pain from obsession and compulsion. You know that you're an obsession and compulsion when your friends say, I don't want to hear his name out of your mouth one more time. Because if I do, I'm done talking to you. You know, and and I can remember that last time, you know, somebody saying that to me before, like, I thought I was done with, when I finally got to that point, I thought I was done with unhealthy relationships. You know, and I said, you know what, this time I'm going to sit still. You know, after the third time of being freaking brought to that point of pain. And, like, and saying to my friend, I remember saying to my friend Angel, like, why do I keep ending up here? You know, why? And he said, because you are looking for the same thing that you looked for when you were using in Narcotics Anonymous. And not in the good way, not in the principles, and not in the, you know, book and the literature and the 12 steps. You're looking for it from another human being, and you're not going to find it. It's inside of you, you know. And he said, if you want to feel self-worth, and you want to feel worthwhile, you need to do things that make you feel worthy and worthwhile, you know. And you need to stop being manipulative, and dishonest, and full of envy, and full of jealousy and hatred. And that was at the end of that last little relationship that lasted for about 3 weeks. And, you know, I got to tell you, that person is at the clinic that I work at now. You know what I mean? And I thought, when I looked across that room, you know what I mean, like, oh, it's not going to be so bad. You know what I mean? And I'm so grateful that the God of my understanding, when I pray something into my life, he allows me to pray it right back out. Because I'd hate to have rode that train all the way to the end. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, God, you know, by the end. And so I said, you know what, I'm done with these unhealthy relationships and these crazy, sick-ass men. And 2 months later, locked and loaded again, you know, in another relationship. And you know what, like, I got to say that it wasn't as intense to me in my mind. And you know what, this is why it's so risky sharing this shit. Somebody's going to get this CD and give it to my ex. But you know what, like, I remember, you know, at the beginning, like, thinking that I'm not that person anymore. Like, I had worked some steps, you know what I mean? I was recovering now. You know, I had 2 years clean. I had some shit. I had my kids back in my life. You know, I was being a good mom. I was socially acceptable in society. And the crazy part is, as much as I thought that's the one that I said, who's your higher power now in? You know, like, all that stuff that I thought I had inside of me, all that stuff that I thought had built me to this place of, like, I'm never going to feel like that again, you know, did not amount to nothing, because all I did was read the literature, you know what I mean, and learn it real well, you know, and be able to break it down and regurgitate it in meetings, you know what I mean? Like, we are some of the most intelligent people, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, like, all of us, every single one of us, you know, and so it's not hard to come in here and sound real good, you know, for any of us. Because you know what? The reality is our stories are all the same. So, you know what I mean? Like, you get some literature in you, and you kind of know everything about each other, and you can say something. Because an honest message is what touches another addict, you know? So I learned, you know what? And that's the reality. Like, I've always been able to friggin' be honest in a meeting. Like, I've been dropping my shit in these meetings since I got here. You know what I mean? Like, I was the one who came in kicking and screaming, raising my hand, drama, breaking chairs in the meetings, you know, rolling into a meeting with a friggin' thing of quarters in my fist after, you know, one of those healthy relationships, you know what I mean? Like, thinking that, like, I was something, you know what I mean? Thinking that I was the shit. And you know what? Like, that stuff brought me to a point of desperation in recovery, you know what I mean? Like, so much spiritual turmoil, you know what I mean? I remember hearing somebody share one time about this, and this is what it's all about when it comes to those relationships, you know what I mean, and why they don't work. And I heard it, and it sounded, it's so profound, yet so simple. When you try and move somebody else's furniture into God's house, it's not going to fit. And that's why it gets real uncomfortable real quick. You know what I mean? And that's the reality. Like, I tried to use other things outside of myself to fill that void that was created for God. You know, and I knew how to pray. I came in with a higher power. Like, I grew up in a home where they taught me about God. They didn't live God. You can believe that. I didn't get here because my parents knew how to live God or spiritual principles. But I was taught about God, and I believed because I knew what God was, and I had a belief system when I came in here that meant that I was a spiritual person, you know. And yet I continued to do the same things that I did out on the street, looking for that attention. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure when I got 3 years clean and started walking to meetings, people were so glad I finally started coming dressed, you know, because I really believed that, you know, all that outside stuff was the only thing from the knees up was the only, and stopped about here, you know, was the only thing I had of value to offer to you. And when you paid attention to that, that's all I needed, you know what I mean, to run off on the next one, to run off on the next, just like that drug, that next high, you know what I mean? I'm telling you, the only requirement I had for a relationship when I got here is you think I'm hot, and I like that you think I'm hot. You know what I mean? I didn't even have to think you were hot when I got here, you know what I mean? If you thought I was hot, that was enough. For real, to be honest, you know, because I'm going to shut up with that one. I got to be careful, real careful about what I say on this. Shit, that's the only problem with conventions. You can get real fucking honest, but they're taping that shit. Yeah, be careful, because you never know who's going to get that fucking CD. you know what? And then I remember my sponsor saying at the end of my last relationship, you better make a list of what you want in the next one, because if you don't, you're not going to get what you need. You know what I mean? And you better have a clear idea of what you want, because I never had a list of what I wanted from you. You know, and then I wonder why I ended up in relationships with, you know, men who couldn't keep a fucking job, you know, you know what I mean? Like, that was my story. I'll take care of you, because obviously, you know, you ain't going to do it. You know, and I'm not just talking about the money. I ain't just talking about the money, you know what I mean? Like, I'll work your program, you know what I mean? Like, all that shit, you know. And I was proud of myself that I had, like, 5 years clean and had more recovery than, you know, my significant other that had double digits. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that shit was cool, you know. And that's what drove my self-esteem, you know what I mean? Like, outside shit drove my self-esteem for a long time. You know what I mean? You know, like, being able to share real good, you know, being able to have people say, like, what you doing with him, you know what I mean? Like, that shit made me feel good, too, you know what I mean? Like, you deserve better than that. And I didn't take, I should have took that shit to heart. Not about, like, you know what I mean? Because I thought they just thought I was cuter than him. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? They're like, really, in reality, some were saying, like, what the fuck are you doing with him? What are y'all doing? Because it ain't a relationship that you're having. Keep coming back. And you know what? Like, and it's sad. It's sad. It's funny, but it's sad, too. Like, it's funny to laugh at the shit we do in relationships once we're out of them. You know, to look back and be like, yeah, that shit was real funny, but going through it is fucking painful. That shit will rob your spirit like no drug can. You know what I mean? Like, crack brought me to my fucking knees. Believe that. It drove me in here. But relationships ripped my spirit apart to the point that I couldn't fucking breathe. You know what I mean? Like, when you can't fucking breathe, like, you're in your freaking bathroom and you can't fucking breathe over somebody, that ought to give you a clue to what you're doing. It ain't so good for you. You know what I mean? Like, that shit is not healthy. You know, and I'm not talking about, like, anxiety or fears. Like, we all have that shit. Like, I mean, because I thought, like, I was going to get in a relationship, the healthy one that I thought I was looking for, and there was going to be no problems. Like, you are going to be Mr. Perfect, I'm going to be Mrs. Perfect, and everything's going to be cool. And that ain't the truth either. You know what I mean? Like, the insanity is not the truth, but the relationships take work. Like, that's what I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted this perfect relationship and none of the work that went with it. Just like the drug. Like, I wanted that high, and I didn't want to have to work for it. You know, and I wanted the easy way. And that's why freaking crack cocaine brought me to my fucking knees fast. Because you got to work for that drug. Ain't no getting around it, you know what I mean? It ain't like you can do a bag and sit back. You know, you heroin addicts had it easy. Cool, I'm good. You know, I'll see you in a couple hours. You know, that crack dealer was like, see you in 15. You know. You may be in denial, bitch, but I ain't. You know what I mean? I'd be like, give me two. Hey, whatever. You know what I mean? Thank God the deer lived right up the street. But You know, like, I didn't want to do the work for anything. You know what I mean? I didn't want to do the work for anything, including relationships. Like, I don't want, you know, I wanted to do the work for you. That's a lie. I wanted to work on you. Like, how was you going to get, like, a better job and a better education and, like, buy this house for us and do all this shit? I didn't want to do the work on me. My sponsor told me that when I got into the relationships, she said, you ain't going to find a good man. And if you do, you're going to destroy him. You know, she was real honest. She said, you ain't going to do nothing but fuck up a good man. So I pray for his ass if he decides to fuck with you. And you know what? To some degree, she was right. Because you know what the real deal is? You know what I mean? Like, the last one was a decent person. I can say that. There was a lot of fucking problems in it, but he was at least a decent person. You know what I mean? Because I had the one in the fucking background that I was raising his two kids out there still fucking getting high. Didn't know where my house was. You know, and his kids were living in it, you know, and he still don't fucking know. And had the balls to tell me not too long ago, oh, you can tell I got resentment still, had the balls to tell me that the reason why he didn't come see his kid had more to do with me than anything, you know, and I had to pray for that man. I had to pray for him, and I had to get over that resentment, because I could have hated him all the way into the ground for me, you know what I mean, and I needed to relief from that, not him, you know what I mean. I needed to be able to raise my children without looking at them about with hatred about him. They needed to see that I had unconditionalness. Because how were they supposed to have unconditional love for me, the recovering addict who had used most of their life, if I couldn't teach them how to be unconditional for him? You know, because my son Jimmy taught me that. My son taught me that. You know what I mean? Because when I got clean, he said to me, because I tried to make an amends with him, and he said, Mom, you tried to be my mother. You tried. You know what I mean? And he never once hated me, never once resented me, never once stopped loving me. You know what I mean? And like that taught me a lot. Because when he used and I wanted to do all that shit to him, hate him, resent him, not love him, my sponsor said, how dare you? How dare you? He didn't do it to you. You know, I had to set boundaries. Don't get me wrong. Like, that boy ain't allowed to live in my house because he will take anything that I leave sitting. You know, and good. I better be careful. He might get here someday. but I love him unconditionally. You know what I mean? I do. And he taught me a lot, you know, in that relationship. And then at the end of my last relationship, I was able to learn so much about myself. You know what I mean? Not about relationships, about myself. Like, I remember in that moment when I was sitting in my bathroom, on my knees, calling my sponsor at 11 o'clock at night and telling her, and this is what, let's see, this was 2 years ago, 10 years clean. No, well, little less than 10 years clean because I have 11 plus years. And I remember sitting there and calling my sponsor and saying, my whole life is a lie. You know what I mean? Like, when you get to that place where you realize, and you know what, it wasn't that my whole life was a lie the whole time. It's just like I had to start lying to myself to be okay with the fact that, like, shit was done. You know what I mean? Like, you get to that point. And I remember sitting in a convention. This one, probably. It was this convention with the main speaker a couple years back. And the speaker said, there's some of you who are sitting here with somebody that you should be done with. There's some of you who are sitting here getting ready to get with somebody you shouldn't be getting with. You know? And I was thinking, oh, God, I'm so glad I'm not in either one of those situations. Boy, was I wrong. And, you know, because you never know when the message is going to catch up to you. You know what I mean? Like, I'll probably be hearing this shit myself later, 2 years from now, and be like, yeah, huh, you were still fucked up. You know, but I can remember, like, sitting in that bathroom and telling my sponsor that. She was like, what? What are you talking about? You know, and I had to get honest about the lies that I've been telling myself. And it was funny, too, because you never know what God's going to place in your life to show you how long you can lie to yourself and be okay with it. Because 2 years before I got out of that relationship, I sent an email to a good friend of mine, like a really good friend of mine, that said, if this shit don't stop soon, I need to leave. 2 years before I left. If it don't stop soon. That's how long we hold on to shit. You know, my sponsor always told me when I first got here, she said, you will be one of those ones who holds on to shit with claw marks. You know, and I believed, you know what I mean, because it was a little bit different than when I was using, you know, he ain't putting his hands on me. You know, all that shit we tell each other. Each one is a little bit better than the last one. And my sponsor told me a long time ago, you know what I mean, like she said, if you're going to compare any of them to the last one while you're out there using, they're all going to pass. You know what I mean, ain't that hard. Ain't that hard to get better than somebody who's beating on you, you know what I mean. And I also had to get honest with the fact in the end of writing my 4-step, he wasn't the abuser, the one that was out there. I was. I taught him how to fucking hit me. You know what I mean? Because my father hit me. You know what I mean? And I didn't know how to forget. I didn't know how to be okay if you didn't love me after you hit me. You know what I mean? And that was some fucked up shit I had to look at. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, because I think I'm a tough ass. You know what I mean? I remember punching him and being like, what? You can't fucking hit me because I'm a girl? Really, 15 years old, 15 years old, you know what I mean? So newcomers, young newcomers, you know what I mean? If you're in here and that's your story, keep coming back. It's all right. We love you, you know, and or, you know, people, anybody, you know what I mean? If you're coming in here, you know, and you ain't sure why you're here, you know what I mean? And you ain't sure what you're doing in the relationship you're in right now, you know, it's all right because God has a plan. Every relationship that comes into our lives stays as long as it needs to for us to learn what we need to learn. You know, I needed every day of that last relationship in order to know what I know about myself today, you know, and I learned, you know what I mean, that I learned all the things that I do, you know what I mean, that's what four steps teach us, you know what I mean, like you got to keep doing them and keep doing them, and that's the reason why we don't stop the steps, because you are not learning everything about you in the first four steps. I was disconnected and detached from the feelings I felt over the relationships I had little. When I got here, my first four step I did with 2 years clean. I wasn't ready to face that shit. All I did was dump it. You know what I mean? I wasn't really ready to heal from it yet. You know, and so, you know, each time I did another one, and each time that I got out of another relationship, I was able to face a little something else that I wasn't able to face before about myself. Because what you're learning about in relationship isn't about him. And if you're him, it ain't about learning about her. When you're in a relationship, it's really about learning about you. You know what I mean? Learning what you do. You know, how you're controlling, how you're manipulative, how you still want what you want when you want it. You know, and how you're not okay when you don't get it. You know, and you know what? Like, in order to learn to love yourself, you need to build a relationship with God. You know, because nobody loves you like God. You know, for real. And if you're here and you're scared of hearing that word, keep coming back. Keep coming back. I am not going to sit up here in front that it's good or early direction. That's from your sponsor. She cannot be your God. You know what I mean? Because I had that experience fucking too. Thinking my sponsor was my God, and that shit brought me to my knees. When she fired me for getting into a relationship she didn't agree with. Ooh, shit, I got to be careful. I told you. You know, but you know what? Like, I love every addict in here, you know? And so you need to find some type of higher power. Because I remember sitting on my couch one day, trying to go to sleep, when the man had walked out, the eviction notice was on the door, custody papers in the mailbox for my kids from a using addict, just lost the rent money, somebody stole it, you know, and laying on that couch and praying to my God to be with me and help me to sleep, just like we do with every other man, you know what I mean, or woman, you know what I mean, like you can't sleep at night, you know, you can't be alone, you know, and you think you need that guy or whatever, and I ask God. You know, that's what I saw. I asked God to come be with me because I couldn't be by myself. And you know what? This peace came over me that I couldn't understand at that time. I had 18 months clean, and this peace came over me, and I fell asleep after saying those words, and I was okay. You know, and I always am mindful that I have to return to that place. Whenever I'm going through something, I need to return to that place because you know what? I will harm you. I will harm him, and I'll harm everybody around me if I'm not connected to my higher power. You know, that's where you learn to love you and lose him. You know what I mean? If he ain't the one, you know what I mean? It's through God. You know, and you know what? Sometimes it's how you learn how to love you and keep him. You know, because you know what? The reality is, we are always talking about bailing on relationships. You know what I mean? We're always quick to run. I had to learn that I was a runner. You know what I mean? Like, say, and even in them running. You know what I mean? I'll be in it. I'm staying, but I'm running. You know what I mean? You can ask the current, you know, my current significant other. Like, I'll be the one fucking trying to sleep in the other bedroom with the door locked because I'm feeling some type of way. You know, but, you know what? Like, we learn how to do some shit so that we can stay still in them and enjoy them, you know, and love us and them at the same time. That's the miracle. You know what I mean? That's the miracle. And you know what? Another thing is that when they say don't leave before the miracle happens, you know what I mean? They ain't talking about all that outside shit. You know what I mean? And they're also talking about, like, that relationship with God. But there, for me, it was when the sound of Narcotics Anonymous put the sound of the word Narcotics Anonymous brought up a feeling inside of my gut that I could never explain, that had never been there before, a sense of belonging, a sense of fellowship, a sense of unity, a sense of diversity, that encompassed my spirit and gave me the ability to begin to look towards that God. You know, that's the miracle that friggin' Narcotics Anonymous gave me. Standing inside this convention and seeing all these addicts who are clean and knowing I'm part of it and not feeling separate from anymore. You know, I love all of you. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It is one of the best conventions I've ever been to, you know, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. Thanks for letting me share.